Welcome to Real Conservative Talk. You are now entering an unsafe space.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the RCT podcast. Just some house cleaning announcements real quick. If you haven't already, go and subscribe to our Substack, which is the RCT Report, and I will post a link in the description for the podcast. It's a free subscription. Unless you want to support the Substack in the podcast, you can do a paid subscription, which is $5 a month, but that's up to you. But it's a free subscription. And that is where I go and I write about a lot of the topics we discuss on the show, but go even more in depth and provides you all the data that I use to form my own opinions on the topics I discuss. Now, today we have two somewhat big news topics to go over. The biggest one, though, last night, the House of Representatives passed a bill that could lead to the potential ban of TikTok in the United States. So I'm going to read an article by the Washington Post first, and then I'll kind of get into my thoughts on this. But it says, the House overwhelmingly passed a measure Wednesday to force TikTok to split from its parent company or face a national ban, a lightning offensive that materialized abruptly after years of unsuccessful negotiations over the platform's fate. Remember, this is not the first time they've discussed doing this, and I believe this isn't even the first bill they put forward to try and do this. This has been a topic of debate for some time. It says the legislation approved 352-65, so a vast overwhelming majority in the House, is a sweeping bipartisan rebuke of the popular video sharing app and an attempt to grapple with allegations that TikTok's China-based parent ByteDance presents national security risk. It says for years, lawmakers have been introducing proposals seeking to restrict the company's activities in the U.S. and finding limited momentum. But these lengthy behind-the-scenes deliberations were hastened, lawmakers said, by the Biden administration's growing support of the effort, coupled with concerns about TikTok's potential influence on U.S. politics, which intensified after the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. Private briefings from national security and law enforcement officials, including a classified hearing last week, served as a call to action for Congress to finally take a stand against TikTok, said Rep. Kathy Castor, a Democrat representative from the state of Florida, a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee as well. It's unclear whether these meetings with the FBI, Justice Department, and Office of the Director of the National Intelligence surfaced new evidence against the company. That's important. We're going to talk about that as well, that little detail. Proponents of the renewed campaign in the House, who sped the bill from introduction to a floor vote in just 8 days, were undeterred by a major lobbying blitz from TikTok, which enlists its users to speak out against the legislation with an app pop-up message and dispatch CEO Chao Zichu to muster support against it this week in the Senate. Again, it was passed in the House. It still has to go to the Senate, I believe, as well, and pass a vote there. But I could be wrong. It may have already done it. I don't know. But it says, we are working with stakeholders for months on this particular issue after the last attempt, and that's why, in part, the vote is so big, said Rep. Raja Krishnamoorthy, which is a Democrat from Illinois, one of the bill's lead sponsors as well. Its fate now rests in the Senate. Okay, so it hasn't gone to the Senate. where the bill picked up two major endorsements Wednesday, but where key holdouts could grind the effort to a jarring halt. Some senators have expressed concern that it may run afoul of the Constitution by infringing on millions of Americans' rights to free expression and by explicitly targeting a business operating in the United States. I believe they are actually referring to Ron Paul, who we're going to hear from here in a second. It says, the overwhelming vote today is a strong signal to the Senate that they need to act. This is Rep. Kathy McMorris, who is a Republican from Washington. So you can see that both sides of the aisle favored this bill. Though TikTok is incorporated in the United States and has headquarters in Los Angeles, its ties to Beijing-based tech giant ByteDance have long triggered fears that the app could be weaponized by the Chinese government to swoop on Americans or shape their political views. And now this is just laughable in itself. So, all right, I said I was going to hold out to the end and give you my opinion, but I'll just be honest with you. I don't agree with this at all. I'll tell you why in a little bit, but that's where my stance is. And again, just hear me out, but I'm going to continue reading. Says, TikTok says it has never shared U.S. user data with China, and its critics have yet to present evidence to the contrary. TikTok has also disputed claims of any foreign interference or influence, but the assurances have failed to assuage many lawmakers on Capitol Hill. TikTok has been unable to reach a deal with national security officials to quell their concerns, fueling efforts in Congress. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've done a lot of reading on China. I know how that system operates, how the economy operates. I can promise you right now, they're definitely sharing information with the Chinese government. That is for sure. Like, I'm not doubting that at all. Most of Chinese businesses are completely state-owned anyway. A large company like ByteDance may not be state-owned, but it's highly, highly controlled by the government anyway. So they're definitely sharing that information. If there's useful data to be found on TikTok, the Chinese government is definitely scalping that information. It says, TikTok blasted the House's secret discussions over its future on Wednesday, saying in a statement that the bill was jammed through for one reason. It's a ban. We are hopeful that the Senate will consider the facts, listen to their constituents, and realize the impact on the economy. 7 million small businesses and 170 million Americans who use our service, the company said in a social media post. There's a lot of people who make a lot of money in the United States on TikTok. And this is where Ron Paul, here in a second, lays a great argument against this legislation. It says, lawmakers unveiled several proposals last year aimed at granting the federal government more power to restrict TikTok and other apps believed to be linked to U.S. adversaries. Last March, House lawmakers hauled in TikTok's CEO for a contentious hearing as they looked to build momentum for action against the firm. The push appeared to fizzle amid blowback from liberal Democrats who said it flouted free speech rights and Republicans who argued it would grant the federal government excessive power to prohibit or censor digital services, which is exactly right. The dynamic suddenly shifted last week after the leaders of House key committee, The dynamic suddenly shifted last week after the leaders of key House committees announced they have reached an agreement on new legislation targeting TikTok. So the article goes on, but look, it's heavy bipartisan support, both sides, as you saw, overwhelming majority in the House of Representatives voted in favor of this. Lawmakers have also accused the platform of fueling anti-Israel sentiment. A Washington Post report last year found that hashtags associated with both pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian sentiment are often used to criticize those movements, while TikTok's opaque algorithms and metrics make determining the magnitude of activity difficult. So what I want to do is I want to play this clip of Ron Paul on News Nation and allow him to elaborate on his own concerns with this legislation. And then I will go into my opinion and what I have concluded from reading the actual bill, because we're going to go through the actual bill itself. It's not very long. And you will see why this is actually not a good thing.
With us now, Senator Rand Paul, author of Deception, the Great COVID Cover-Up. Senator, it's good to see you. Thank you. I think the book's important. Goes through what China did. They created a virus in a lab, charitable, explanation is that it escaped from the lab, then China lied about it, they covered it up, and a million plus Americans died. If they are willing to do all of that, why is it okay for China to own a company and have access to so much of the personal information and control of the phones of so many Americans through TikTok?
Well, there is this little sticking point. It's called the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. You're not really allowed to take property from people in the United States without due process. You have to go to court, you have to accuse them of a crime to take their property. The Fifth Amendment says you just can't take stuff from people. So the company TikTok is owned about 60% by international investors, including some Americans. So I don't know that you can take someone's property by fiat. You can't just sort of pass a law and take someone's property constitutionally. There also is the problem of the First Amendment. 180 million Americans use this social media platform to express themselves. And if the company is banned or you say it can't have the current ownership and the company goes away, you're basically taking their First Amendment rights away with them also. I'm no fan of the Chinese Communist government. I'm the least favorite person you'll ever find, or one of the biggest critics of the Chinese government. But there's a difference between not giving them money and then an economic embargo. So while I'm not for giving China any money, giving them any research money, I'm not for preventing us from having trade with China. Trade is largely beneficial to both countries.
Your points are well taken and well made. The First Amendment issue I'll put aside for just one second. We'll get to it. But on the issue of ownership, you've taken a very strong line about espionage in the United States and what the government should and should not be able to do. Would you be okay with the U.S. government being able to demand at any time without a warrant all of the things that TikTok is going to be forced to hand over to the Chinese, everything from people's photos on their phone to their location information?
Absolutely not. But, you know, TikTok is not going into your house and taking your stuff. People sign up with TikTok the same way they sign up with Google, Facebook, or any of the other big tech companies, and they do all scrape your information. So if you don't like TikTok doing it, then you want to pass a law to ban it from all countries from absorbing your information, you could. But if you're going to accuse a particular company of a crime and you're going to say that they're giving it to the government of China, one, you would have to prove that. That's an accusation. That's not something that's been proven by anyone. We know that the Chinese government does demand things, but we don't know that any information really is going from TikTok to any of these people in China.
So again, that's Ron Paul, who, by the way, has been extremely critical of the Chinese government. He is by no means in favor of China, but he also sees the potential consequences that this bill has. And when he was referring to the Fifth Amendment, let me read that back half. He's referring to the last part of the Fifth Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, which says, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without its just compensation. So the government can't just take your property. In this case, property is either any American ownership in TikTok that would be basically taken away due to a TikTok ban, or, by the way, any income that is earned. Income is property. And those TikTok influencers who are earning an income from TikTok that would lose that income with a TikTok ban, that is the government, without any due process, without any court case, without any judge finding, just passing a bill saying, nope, you can't do it. And, you know, we've been on this long path of regulating in the United States, but there's a difference between regulating something or regulating the activities of a company and banning a company altogether. Now, we're going to go through this bill. Again, it's not very long. And there's a lot in it that is, you know, just catches my eye. But I also want to say this, too. To the Republicans and the conservatives, and really to the Democrats that support this. You know, Tommy Lahren, who I respect and I agree with on, again, a lot of things, last night tweeted something along the lines of, oh, these TikTok influencers are now crying because TikTok's going to be banned and they'll have to go get a real job. Well, I hate to break it to you, Tommy, but what is the difference between someone who is a TikTok influencer who is either spreading some sort of message via doing their little dances they do, or a political TikTok channel or whatever. And what you do, you're an influencer. You get on TV and you state your opinion, and that is your primary job. And the only difference between you and someone doing it on TikTok is the platform that they're using. And this is where it starts getting very murky for me. So the argument for this is that data is being collected by the Chinese government, and the Chinese government is going to weaponize that data. Okay, I don't want anyone collecting my data. I get that. Completely understand. Completely agree. The other part of it is that China controls the algorithm, and they are pushing indoctrination and unfavorable messaging that could sway politics in the United States. Now, how hypocritical is that of us and our government to even make this claim? And look, they're definitely doing that. I'm not arguing that TikTok is doing any of this. They are 100% doing all of this. So I just want to get that clear. Like I'm not denying that TikTok is not doing all the bad shit that they're being accused of doing. They're also, the people who are in favor of this, saying that it influences the young minds, again, the young Americans, particularly our children. It's influencing them in bad ways. It's indoctrinating them, like I just said. And if you go and you watch TikTok in China, it's completely different than the TikTok that is in the United States. Well, first of all, let me say this. The United States is a country built on personal liberty, which means we have freedom. And we have the freedom to, guess what? Film ourselves doing a dance, to film ourselves speaking out politically, to film ourselves talking about conspiracy theories, to film ourselves, you know, fixing things and doing whatever. And in China, they don't have those same freedoms. So for one, not only do we have the freedom to produce this kind of content, you know, political focused content, educational focused content, entertainment focused content, anything. Not only do we have the freedom to produce it, but we also have the freedom to consume it. You see, with personal liberty comes personal responsibility. And everyone on TikTok is voluntarily on TikTok. The best thing the government can do if they really oppose what TikTok is doing is just making everyone aware of what the Chinese government is doing, of what this Chinese company is doing. Running information campaign, try and convince the population that it's bad. But don't take away someone's voluntary ability and responsibility, by the way, to use the app. Because, you know, Facebook is banned in China. Why? Because part of communism, for those that don't know this, is the centralized control of information. And the Chinese government is only going to approve information sources, whether it is a proxy of information or the people who are producing that information, like media or, you know, some news source, they're going to want full control of that. That way they can have full control of the information being displayed. What we're running into right now in the United States is that the United States government also wants that same power. And that is completely against the First Amendment, by the way. But we have to understand, everyone on TikTok is voluntarily on TikTok. Are they pushing unfavorable stuff towards children? Yeah, they are. But guess what? They're also pushing unfavorable stuff towards adults. But there's an algorithm. And I've used TikTok. And you know what TikTok is going to show you? It's going to show you all the content that you want to view. So if I go on TikTok, it may show me a video of a sexy half-naked woman dancing and showing her ass, and I'll swipe, and then the next video may be of a guy talking about how bad Trump is, and then I'll swipe, and then the next video may be a guy talking about how bad Biden is, and then I'll swipe, and the next video may be talking about how to fix a car. And what it's going to do is it's going to see, okay, what did I watch longest? Did I interact with any of these videos? You know, what it's going to have some kind of judgment on where my interest is. And if I sat there and watched the entirety of the video of a girl shaking her ass and only watched, you know, 10% of the other videos, guess what it's going to keep suggesting on my algorithm? I'm going to get a bunch of videos of women shaking their ass. And then as I view those more, it's going to keep sending them. But if I don't want to watch that, if I go on to TikTok for the purpose of, you know, finding other conservatives on the platform, seeing or learning about some conspiracy theory, right? Like whatever it may be. And I go and I watch videos based on that. Guess what it's going to do? It's going to suggest videos that are related to that content. And so the algorithm is only showing you what you're wanting to see. So if you have people in Congress that are saying, oh, I go on TikTok and all I see is half-naked young women all the time, that's because all you are wanting to freaking watch is the half-naked young women. I'm sorry. Some of these older individuals in Congress don't seem to grasp the concept of how these algorithms work. TikTok wants to make money. And the way TikTok makes money is by advertising, by viewership, and it's going to then suggest videos that it knows you're going to view. And it is up to the people who are producing the content to grasp your interest and get you to view longer. But where the Chinese government is going to scalp data is based off your interests and in anything that they can determine outside of your that stuff. And yeah, they're going to use it to their advantage. Guess what? The United States does the exact same thing in other countries. The United States does the exact same thing in our own country. Here's what I don't get. For some reason, we have this huge campaign, especially on the right, where we know that schools, the public school system, has gone to shit, that they are pushing Marxist ideology. This has been determined and confirmed. We know this. They're pushing Marxist ideology. They're pushing this whole gender and LGBTQ propaganda. And they are indoctrinating our kids. They're forcefully indoctrinating children for 8 hours a day. Forcefully, by the way. The kids have no choice but to go to school. For 8 hours a day, it's okay that our government is spitting Chinese Marxist propaganda to our children. And that is somehow healthier than the Chinese government gathering data so it can spit the same Chinese propaganda on TikTok, which is an app voluntarily used by the children. If the parents didn't want the children using TikTok, guess what? They don't allow them to use TikTok. If the adults on TikTok didn't want to use TikTok, guess what? You're a freaking adult. You don't have to use TikTok. It doesn't change your life one bit of difference. So basically, my first thought of this is that the government is okay if it spits the exact same bullshit that China wants to show us, all the same junk news, all the same junk information, all the same junk propaganda, literally the same message, a lot of it. It's okay if the U.S. government tells us it, but it's not okay if another government tells us it. For some reason, it's better. It's healthier. It's coming from our own government. So really what it is it's a need to control the population and to propagate the population. And they don't want the outside influence. Again, this is going back to China and their own ability and common Marxist strategy, which is in the Communist Manifesto, by the way. I am not making this up. This is one of the 10 steps of the Communist Manifesto, is centralizing news and information and having it controlled by the state. And part of doing that is by being able to control the flow of that information. And these social media platforms are nothing more than a platform for the news to be posted, right? It's like a middleman. So in this bill, as I'm reading it, which is HR 7521, I'll put the link to the actual bill. Again, I don't do news articles. I do actual bills. If you want to get the best idea and form the best opinion, go to the writing itself. So basically what they're doing is they're giving TikTok or ByteDance an ultimatum. You can divest or TikTok will be banned. And it also states that any company who basically operates a website, a media platform, any kind of app that is used, anything that you can post customer reviews, anything like that, anything that you can go and interact on, if it is controlled via directly or indirectly of 20% more stake by a foreign adversary, by the way, a foreign adversary is not only a foreign government, but any individual or business that is located inside of the country that is deemed a foreign adversary. And foreign adversary in this bill is defined as anything, any country under, I believe it's subsection 4872 D2, which is the definition, or the countries listed under that is China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. Actually, I don't even know if North Korea is on there. I think Iran, Russia, and China are the only ones on there, but I looked at it earlier. Maybe North Korea is, but anyone located in those countries. Now, the important part of this is the direct and indirect ownership. Indirect ownership is when you own like just a stock share. Like I have indirect ownership technically of NVIDIA because I own shares of stock in NVIDIA. I have indirect ownership in Facebook. The crazy thing about this is what they have done is they just opened up the gates of hell with this. Good intentions, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and this is a prime example of it. Yes, they don't want China collecting all of this potentially harmful data on U.S. citizens. I get it, but now you just basically open the door where the Chinese government can use its own populace as proxies to invest indirectly by purchasing shares of American companies like Facebook, like Google, like any of those. Like X would be hard because it's privately owned, but any publicly controlled company. And you could, by the way, this is in theory very possible, where enough people buy up 20% of these companies, at least a 20% share. China has, what, 1.5 billion people. The government can control all of them. They can give money to all of them. You understand? For you to disclose ownership in a publicly traded company, all you got to do is purchase 10% of the company, one individual. But you can have 100 different individuals come in and buy up a 20% stake and split evenly among all of them. And you can do it very slowly. And guess what? Individuals living in a foreign adversary country now own 20% of, let's say, Facebook. Then this bill gives the president of the United States authority to determine whether or not there's a national security threat. And if there is a national security threat with the ownership of the company, as they are saying with TikTok, because it's China, it's a foreign adversary, then they will either force that company or force these foreign entities to divest from the company, or that company will be banned. Well, if China goes and, let's say in theory, they get enough people to purchase 20% stake in Facebook or Google, if they don't divest, guess what? We're going to ban Facebook and Google. You see where this is going, the road this is going down? They could literally weaponize our own policy now. It also gives the executive branch a substantial amount of power in determining what companies are subject to being divested, which, by the way, if it's a publicly traded company, divesting that ownership is going to be extremely costly to shareholders. Because if a foreign entity owns 20% of the shares in a publicly traded company, let's say, guess what? If we're forcing them to divest even half of that, what do you think is going to happen to those shares? That's a substantial sell-off. I'm just saying, you're looking at a significant amount of negative consequences when it comes to this bill. You also have it to where, since they are granting the President of the United States authority, all Biden has to do if he's in office, oh, I don't like Facebook and the information they're putting out about me. Guess what? They're going to go and find where 20% of the shares are held by some sort of indirect ownership by any foreign entity. They can put these entities, say that they're registered in China. Let's just say they have a branch located in China. Guess what? Now they can force that company to divest. This is a long, slippery slope here. This is where the government can now say, you know what? We're going to have control over almost the entire private sector. Because guess what? How many companies use a website? How many companies use a website where you can go and interact and give your data? By the way, the website, all it has to do is have a sign-up page. Like if you go to my Substack, and let's say my Substack is making, I think it's $1 million in revenue or something like that is what their limit is. So if my Substack is making $1 million in revenue every year, and you go on there and you have to give your email to subscribe, even though it's free, to my Substack, and I have foreign investors, let's say I have a guy from Saudi Arabia that owns 20% of the Substack and helps me with my research and stuff, whatever, and I'm writing bad hit pieces on Joe Biden, which is my freedom, my First Amendment right, by the way, they can force me to close down my company, my Substack. They can ban it. How is this not a direct violation of property rights, of free speech, of a long list of constitutional violations? This is extremely scary. The biggest issue I have with it is that only a few, based on the voting results, only a few members of Congress actually see the problem with this. And it's on both sides, by the way. It's not just Republicans that are, you know, see some of the dangers of this. There's a lot of Democrats that do too. And props to them, because I believe AOC and someone else, who I, again, argue against all of their beliefs, I think they actually oppose this as well. There is I can't express how dangerous this bill is. Now, the other issue I see is going back to what I said about personal responsibility. I see this in Australia because for those that have listened to me know that I'm back and forth between the US and Australia. And there's a culture here where any issue that is taking place in the country, like here it's a very fast increase in the cost of living. It's extremely expensive to live here. And the only ways that they can ever seem to fix it is by expecting the government to come up with a solution. It's never, and this is just here in Australia, very rarely do you hear, unless it comes to some taxes that they talk about, where we need to reduce government in order to, and allow the private sector to find a solution. It's always, no, the government needs to figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to fix this. No, because you can't expect the person that caused the problem to always fix the problem, especially when it comes to the government. And throughout history, almost 100% of the time throughout history, in fact, I don't know of any examples that state otherwise, government tends to start off small in the beginning of a nation's tenure and always increases in size and always becomes more tyrannical. This is what our founding fathers talked about and why they structured the U.S. government the way they did. Now, I want to read, and I've read this a couple times, Federalist Paper number 8, written by Alexander Hamilton. And again, there were prophets. Like, these weren't even speculators. These were prophets. In Federalist Paper number 8, Alexander Hamilton says, "This picture is not too highly wrought, though I confess I would not long remain a just one. Safety from external danger is the most powerful director of national conduct. Even the ardent love of liberty will, after a time, give way to its dictates. The violent destruction of life and property incident to war, the continual effort and alarm attendant on a state of continual danger, will compel nations the most attached to liberty to resort for repose and security to institutions which have a tendency to destroy their civil and political rights. To be more safe, they at length become willing to run the risk of being less free. And he goes on to the bottom here. And he says, they would endeavor to supply the inferiority of population and resources by more regular and effective system of defense, by disciplined troops and by fortifications. They would, at the same time, be necessitated to strengthen the executive arm of government, in doing which their constitutions would acquire a progressive direction towards monarchy. It is of the nature of war to increase the executive at the expense of the legislative authority, which means you, in the time of national security, by the way, we saw this with the U.S. Patriot Act. If you go and you actually look at the documentary of Edward Snowden and what was going on with Dick Cheney and George Bush behind the scenes, that consolidation of power given to the president in the time of a national security threat is what puts you on a fast track towards an authoritarian regime. Sorry. We are seeing this right now. We're seeing this in this bill. By the way, what do they say? They say, okay, TikTok is a national security threat. So we need to eliminate the portion of it, the Chinese ownership of it, which is the national security part, or we need to ban it. And we are going to give the president basically full control when it comes to determining whether or not a company and a company's ownership is a national security threat. Everything they have done gives the president of the United States more and more power. Go to the border bill, which wasn't a border bill. It's a Ukraine funding bill, but it had some border things in it. But what was one of the things they included was, you know, once daily border crossings increased above, I think it was like 5,000 per day, it gave the president the authority to then take action. And why would, first of all, we need a border bill? Well, because the border crisis is a substantial national security threat. And I agree with that, by the way. But it does show you where Alexander Hamilton was right, saying that everything will be deemed a national security threat. What did they talk about with national white supremacy, right? White nationalists in the United States, domestic terrorism, but which, by the way, when they define terrorism in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, it can't be domestic, but domestic terrorism, and they focus on white supremacy in the United States and how that was a danger to, it was the largest national security threat. Remember, they actually had this on the White House website, by the way, saying that white nationalists were the largest national security threat. Guess what? If it's a national security threat, they can consolidate power. And when they consolidate power, they can give it more to the executive branch, which is easier to win elections for and can get control of the way that the Democrats are trying to do it than it is to do so in the legislative branch. If you pass bills in the House and the Senate, guess what? You need majority votes. You need both of them to vote in favor of the bill. And if it's a constitutional amendment, you need overwhelming majority, 2/3, and then you need 75% of the states on top of that to agree to it. But just regular bills, you need a simple majority in the House, simple majority in the Senate, and approval by the president. But the more they consolidate power and they allow the president to dictate action of the government via executive order, the easier it is to get things that they want done passed into law. And as it stands right now, you'd say, well, Michael, executive orders are basically just the president, you know, trying to enforce laws that already exist. Yes, but they're trying to change that. They're trying to give him more power. And look, all presidents that come in take advantage of the executive authority. There's no doubt about that. But now what you're seeing is you're having the Democratic Party, who is actually trying to change institutions inside of the United States. A lot of it has to do with the way we run our campaigns and the way that we elect our president. And I talked about this with the whole National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, to where it will basically allow them to monopolize the executive branch. And then after that, all they got to do is eliminate the filibuster and it's over with. So this is why we're going down a dangerous route. Look, maybe banning TikTok is a good choice. The problem is when you put this bill in, it sets the precedent for going even further. And that's where this issue lies. The other issue I have when it comes to us, you know, being so hateful towards a lot of businesses, I go back to Fetterman. When the Japanese company, I can't remember the name of it, was looking at buying U.S. Steel. And Fetterman was against it. And everyone loved Fetterman. All the Republicans, you know, started getting behind Fetterman. Oh, my God. Yeah, he said something America first, right? He's like, no, we need to secure. We can't allow a Japanese company to come in there and buy U.S. Steel. We want to save U.S. Steel and secure union jobs, right? And everyone loved it. Conservatives loved it. And I sat here and I thought, I'm like, are you kidding me? U.S. Steel used to be the largest company in the United States, or in the world, actually, for a long time. Guess what U.S. Steel is worth now? It's worth hardly anything. They were going to buy U.S. Steel for like a couple hundred million dollars. U.S. Steel was going to go out of business. Now, you tell me what is worse. We don't allow a Japanese company, who, by the way, Japan is an ally, very successful economy, big trade relationship, and also owns other entities in the United States. But we don't want this Japanese company to come in and buy U.S. Steel. We want to focus on trying to save U.S. Steel and save union jobs. Okay, well, what happens when U.S. Steel goes out of business because you didn't let the Japanese company buy them and they have a diminishing share of the world marketplace when it comes to steel, because the U.S. steel production is terrible now. Used to be top in the world. Now it's not. It's very uncompetitive. Well, all those union jobs are gonna get lost. No one's gonna have a job. So if you had, you know, let's say 10,000 employees working at U.S. Steel, is it better for them to be employed in the United States? By the way, they would still retain the union. Okay, they weren't gonna lose the union. The union's separate from that. But they would still retain that union job, employed by a Japanese entity, or not be fucking employed at all. You tell me what is America first. You see, we have this hate for TikTok. I don't like a lot of the TikTok influencers. I disagree with probably a substantial amount of them. I think it's crazy that these women go on there, shake their ass, and make all this money for it. But who am I? Who am I to judge? Who am I, someone who believes in the capitalist free market, to say that someone making money, it shouldn't be allowed to do so, or that it's not worth anything? It is worth something because people are paying in some form or another to view that. They want to view it. Again, for there to be a supply of something, there has to be demand for it. It's simple economics. I say this about the child sex trafficking or pedophilia, right? Like, I can never grasp why anyone would view child pornography. It's sick to me. It is absolutely sick and disgusting. I think they should all be shot. But the only reason child pornography is such a big thing is because there's such a big market for it. There's a lot of demand for it, which means there's a lot of sick people out there. But that's just the fact of the matter. If no one ever viewed child pornography, guess what? There would be no child pornography. So that's, we need to consider this. The fact that TikTok is such a big platform in the United States is because people like being on TikTok. And they do so voluntarily. And is it a Chinese company? Yes. Is China unfairly playing the game of economics when it comes to international trade and stuff like that? Absolutely. But we need to combat it at there, right? We need to determine what our relationship is with China economically, whether it's tariffs on trade, whether it's trade imbalances, whether it is anything to do with that, then actually banning Chinese companies who are, by the way, all the TikTok influencers getting paid by TikTok are basically contracted by TikTok. They're employees of TikTok. In reality, they are employees of TikTok. If you're being paid by an entity, you're employed by that entity. And how many Americans, there's one, Kobe Lane, I think is his name. He's a black guy. I think he's from Africa, who moved here not long before COVID started and had lost his job because the U.S. government forced all of the shutdowns. Remember that? And he lost his job and he was broke. And he started making funny videos that people loved watching. Loved watching. Voluntarily watched, by the way. I think they're hilarious. And he made millions over COVID because of TikTok. So you tell me what is bad. Is the U.S. government better, even though they shut down that man's ability to earn an income because of their COVID restrictions, where he got laid off? Or is the Chinese government bad because they have this app now that allowed him to go and make people laugh and provide content that he was able to monetize and not only maintain his subtle lifestyle, but become a very luxurious lifestyle? And we're mad at China. We're mad at this Chinese company. The way I see it is, if Americans can benefit from it, then why wouldn't we be okay with it? As long as it's voluntary, as long as we're not forcing people to be on the platform, as long as we are not forcing people to, you know, work in certain industries and whatever, as long as it's free, as long as it's fair, and as long as it's voluntary, then that's what matters. That's what's great about the United States, is we don't have these restrictions. We're not supposed to. And that is where we are going down a dark path. I know a lot of the conservatives, I think Charlie Kirk, I haven't listened to Ben Shapiro yet, but Charlie Kirk was against the legislation. Now he said, after doing a whole bunch of reading, he's for it and thinks TikTok should be banned. I still don't agree with it. Because we have, in the United States, again, become a society, and I hate the word society because we're individuals. We're not, you know, we're not a group. We're just individuals that make up a group. Everyone's different. But we have gotten this, you know, somewhat mutual agreement among our populace that the government should be controlling and limiting and regulating responsibility in our lives, and that, you know, oh, Chinese companies good, bad, American companies good. Okay, well, American companies, because, you know, certain things that, by the way, we are our own enemies, our own worst enemies when it comes to a lot of the economic problems in the United States. We are. American citizens are our own worst enemies. We want unions. Okay, great. I agree with the ability to unionize and negotiate on behalf of employees to the employer for better working conditions, higher wages. Great. But guess what? We want permanent unions. We want to keep paying dues. We want to increase wages, right? We want everyone to get paid more, and that's fine. But we don't ever want to accept what the consequences of that are. We don't want to ever accept the fact that, you know, someone here in Australia, my wife's cousin's husband, fiance husband, said the other day, he's a builder, and again, like I said, Australia has this extreme cost of living crisis right now. And he said, you know, you can't find builders. Everyone thinks that the labor is the expensive part, and it's not. It's very minimal. In fact, labor is pretty cheap. It's materials that cost money. And I had to sit on that for a second. I'm like, no, labor costs money. There's only like two expenses that are incurred by a business in reality. And when you look at accounting, yeah, we may split it up into 20 different sections. You know, okay, we're paying interest here. We're depreciating this vehicle. We have this expense, that expense. In reality, it's all labor. Everything is labor. You only an individual can pay another individual. If you buy lumber to build your house, what do you think the cost incurred when you purchase the lumber? What do you think that's for? You're not paying the tree. The tree's not pocketing that money. It's the people who are involved in some sort of labor that pertain to the production of that lumber for your house. And there's a line of it. There's a chain, right? There's if you're building a house, you got to pay the contractor because he works and he sets up and organizes everyone underneath him to build this house. Okay, so you have all the laborers that are going to build the house you're paying for as well. Well, materials is a different expense. No, it's not. You're paying labor for the materials, the lumber, the drywall, the concrete. Guess what? You're paying other individuals that produce those materials for you. Okay, and you're paying them for their labor, whatever that is. Now, they have a set price that then allows them to receive a profit and then also pay for the labor that is along that chain. But labor is all you're paying for in any circumstance. And then the other expense you have incurred by business is taxation. And taxation pays for a lot of labor too, by the way. But the reason I split the two when you have labor expense and taxation is because it's forcefully taken from you by an entity that has no part in the business venture that you're taking part in, right? Like if you're building a house, the government's taxing you, or sorry, if you're getting paid to build a house and the government's taxing you, well, they didn't have anything to do with you in your business and your construction business. So that's why I'm saying that, you know, it's a separate tax. But all in all, guess what? Tax revenue is going to pay for labor that does somewhat sometimes benefit you. And the other reason I don't consider taxation the same expense is because we don't know where a lot of that money's going a lot of the time anyway. But going back to my original message here, when we talk about America First, it's always about the producer, right? And not the big producers, because the left and the right have now seem to merge against the elites, right? The billionaires, like they control everything. If you're a conservative, you're like, the elites control everything. And if you're a leftist, you're saying the elites don't pay enough in taxes. And every time, it's all about the worker. Look, in an economy, in a balanced economy, you have producers, you have consumers. Guess what? Every consumer is a producer, and every producer is a consumer in a balanced economy. The reason why, like, illegal immigration is bad is because it creates a consumer class that doesn't produce, an unemployed consumer class, where we are now giving them benefits, and they're going to go spend in the economy, but they're not involved with anything in that economy other than buying shit. And that is where, and this same goes for welfare, by the way. That is where we start having problems, because there's only a certain amount of money in an economy. You can't just create out of thin air. There's only so many resources. There's only so much money. Therefore, to subsidize this consumer class that is separate from its production and has no involvement in production, you have to take from both the producer and consumer, which, by the way, is the exact same. Look, we think producer is just like the business entity. Well, no, a business entity is nothing. A corporation does nothing if the people that work for the corporation don't do what they're supposed to do. If you went and created a corporation today, filed it with the government, guess what? It's only a name. It won't make any money. The individuals in the corporation are the ones that have to make the money. So when they start talking about corporate greed, this is why it's a flawed argument, because a corporation can't be greedy. A corporation can't be anything. It's literally just a name on a paper. It's an organizational structure. And the individuals that run the corporation have to be greedy. And then you have to say, to really double down on your argument saying that corporations are greedy, you have to set some sort of limit on what greed is greedy and what's not. And then you have to say, well, everyone running that corporation is above that limit, that line, whatever that line is, where it's okay, that's excessively greedy. And that's not true, because not everyone is as greedy as every other person. Some people are less greedy, some people are more greedy, but everyone is greedy, by the way. But, you know, the corporate greed argument is very flawed from the get-go, but we are all about the worker. We always want people to have good jobs, get paid great wages, fair wages, and I get that. But it's also important, if we want America to be the best, that we focus on the consumer. Because what the hell is the point of making $30 an hour if the cost of bread, a loaf of bread, is $10 and the cost of milk is $20? You know, this is why international trade, and why some of the globalist argument is a little bit flawed too, because I'm a nationalist. I'm not for this one world government shit, but I am for free trade, because some countries can focus on, this is called competitive and comparative advantages, by the way, they can focus on producing certain things that we want in the United States. International trade has provided us with certain foods that we may not have had before. It's provided us with certain technologies we may not have had before. It's provided us with a number of different things. And yeah, some of it may be slave labor coming out of China. I get it. That's wrong. That's where we need to say, hey, you know, you guys need to play on the same field here and pay your laborers. But, you know, when we're talking like in terms of Japan, if Japan can make a phone that costs $20 less, or 20% less, let's say, $20 isn't much when it comes to phones, say 20% less than an American company can, but it does all the same shit, then, you know, why wouldn't it be to the benefit of the people in the United States to be able to have access to purchase the cheaper phone for 20%? Guess what? They can save now that money, or they can consume another product with the excess. What people fail to realize is a lot of the problems that the families are having today isn't that things are so expensive and that they aren't getting paid enough. It's that we consume a lot more. You know, back in the 40s, people want to say, oh, well, my grandparents could buy a house for $5,000 and they only had the father only worked and the mother stayed home, took care of the kids. Yes, that's all great. But old grandpa wasn't paying a $15 a month Netflix subscription, on top of that, paying another $20 a month for Amazon Prime and, you know, four other subscriptions for streaming platforms. On top of that, paying, you know, a subscription for this service and that service and this service, and going out and buying as many clothes. We have access to more shoes. We have, by the way, houses are a hell of a lot nicer now than they were, you know, 70 years ago. They're built a hell of a lot better now than they were 70 years ago. So yeah, they cost more, but it's also more a higher quality. So are a lot of the products that we have access to. You know, grandpa didn't have a freaking $1,500 iPhone that cost him $100 a month to, maintain that cell phone plan. He didn't have a freaking $2,000 iPad or Mac computer. This is why things are unaffordable. And you say, well, it's the consumer, it's that consumer culture, right? We've created a consumer culture in the United States. Who created the consumer culture? Please tell me. The big bad businesses? The same big bad businesses that you work for? A lot of you own? How can you argue that we have this bad consumer culture in the United States, which I get, we go overboard, but how can you argue with me that we have this bad consumer culture that was created and beat into us by the greedy corporations? Get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry, but really, get the fuck out of here. Who created that culture? The consumers themselves. When you make money, making money is like a drug. You get the same high when you make a lot of money as you do from like cocaine, I think. Well, guess what? What is the purpose of money? Well, the purpose of money is you can go and buy stuff. You can take care of your needs. You can make more money. All money is a medium of exchange. It is a gateway to being able to take care of your needs, but also being able to afford your wants. Okay? If you just have money in your bank, guess what? It's worthless. Some people like it because it gives them a feeling of security, and that's great, but most people are spending it. Now, in China, when it comes to their consumer culture, that consumer culture is growing. You understand? They're getting more freedoms given to them now, economic freedoms, because China has implemented some capitalism in there to boost their economy because communism doesn't work. But that consumer culture is growing. China, though, has a higher savings rate, a far higher savings rate on average than the typical U.S. citizen. I think their average savings rate was around 30% household savings, where in the U.S. it was like less than 7%. Why is that? Well, a lot of it has to do with some of the systemic issues they had, and also the fact that they go and use that money for various things like investing in housing to try and get their son a wife, you know, like trying to boost their economic standing so that they are deemed more valuable in terms of their peers, because they have this whole social credit system, by the way, not only their peers, but potential suitors. There's a lot of different reasons why their savings rate is so much higher than the U.S. By the way, it's actually diminishing. And one thing, I was reading a book called The New China Playbook, written by an economist who is Chinese. And yes, she is a part of the World Economic Forum, but I read everything I get my hands on. And she was talking about how actually the goal is to try and get out of that savings, right? Because they want to access the savings, because all this money is being stashed away into savings account or under their bed or in their closet by the Chinese population. Guess what? It has no benefit to the Chinese economy at that point. They need to actually be spending it. That is why investing in the stock market is better for the overall economy than you just saving your money in a savings account. When you save it in a savings account, there's a little bit of benefit, but for the most part, it is just money that is stored away and does not circulate in the economy. It does not benefit anybody other than you potentially, but you're really losing money in a savings account, so it doesn't benefit you either. But this idea that, oh, we have a consumerism problem in the U.S. and, you know, the extension of credit has caused these problems. These credit companies, they've caused the problem, right? Because they'll lend you credit so you can go and buy all this type of stuff. Okay, well, again, back to personal responsibility, you don't have to file for a credit card. Everyone's needs are different and everyone's situation is different, but you don't have to do it. It's voluntary. No one's forcing you to. Well, Michael, I need to build up my credit to go buy a house. Do you? Okay. Well, you could save the money. You can get a credit card and be responsible with the credit card to build up your credit. And I get that. I think the credit system's freaking bullshit anyway. But there's other ways you can build up your credit. You know, oh, you know, Michael, we want to consume college, right? So everyone goes and gets student loans for college. That's a cultural issue. Yeah, okay, I can see that argument. But as far as consuming products in discretionary spending on a micro level in the United States, no. That is our own fault. Okay? We gave ourselves that addiction. The businesses didn't do that. All the businesses do, all the greedy corporations do, is feed that addiction. Okay? They say, oh, look, people want to buy iPhones. Well, I'm going to sell iPhones. There was a demand for cell phones in the 90s when cell phones started coming out. So Apple says, well, what if we can make that better? What if we can make it a touchscreen and make it to where you can go on the internet? Oh, everyone's going to buy our iPhone then. Guess what? Everyone bought the iPhone. Well, now we got to keep making it better. Okay, making it better. And then you have Samsung comes in and says, well, we need to compete with that because everyone wants the iPhone. They like the idea of the iPhone. All they're doing is filling demand of the consumers. It starts with the consumers. So why is it that during COVID, when they give everyone stimulus checks, guess what? No one saves that. They went and spent it. That's why it's a joke. We are our own enemy. Us as people, the citizens of the United States, are our own worst enemy. A lot of times when it comes to inflation, even though inflation is caused by the government, who is pushing them to be like that? We are. Because they want to please us. Because if they please us, they get votes. So in order to please us, they, you know, do things like spend crazy amounts of money to keep the status quo. You know, we don't want to cut Social Security. We know Social Security is the biggest expense in the United States. We know Social Security is a problem. We know that it's could lead to a potential financial collapse in the United States. But oh no, I don't want to give up my benefits. No. And I understand why. It goes both ways, but us younger people who haven't paid into it as long need to really sit back and say, "You know what? We need to figure something else out." But we don't. We allow them to keep doing what they're doing. You know, why is it the deficit every year? Why is it we never have a surplus? We always run a deficit. Because there's demand for that deficit. And the demand derives from either us as the constituents of the people who elected the officials in our government that are running the deficit. And the demand is also the elected officials' own self-interest. But we're a big problem. And we need to self-acknowledge that. We need to sit back and have we need to freaking self-check ourselves and really be honest. So, you know, that's my message today. I was going to talk about Trump. We could talk about this actually. So Trump, 6 charges in the state of Georgia were dropped in regards to Trump's Georgia trial. That is the confidential documents trial. Now, Trump has 41 charges, so it's only 6 of the 41. And basically, they were dropped because the judge, Judge McAfee in Georgia, argues that the charges were so broad that it actually didn't provide enough information for the defense to make any kind of argument to get Trump off the hook. So what they did, and Trump's attorney, Alina Haba, who, by the way, is like the best-looking attorney in the world, in my opinion, she referred to it basically, it was Georgia either being sloppy or being intentional with what they did and trying to get by with it, because by making these charges so broad and not providing enough information to the defense, they could have, and this is the judge speaking, not me, they could have charged Trump with 100 different crimes that he could have potentially committed, that he may not have committed, but he could have potentially committed, because they all fall under these vague charges that were brought up. And he really had no chance. It was unfair. And that is why these charges were dropped. So that's some big news coming out of Georgia. Again, it's only 6 of the 41 charges, and a lot of them are related to Trump's actual pressure campaign, is per the article, where he had called the guy and said, "Hey, find me my 11,000 votes." It was the charges mainly related to that, not the actual confidential documents, which actually isn't even the Georgia trial to begin with. That's down in Florida. So again, he still faces, 35 more charges. We'll see how that goes. But as it stands right now, some of these have been dropped. And I think the other ones will eventually get dropped because of Fannie Willis's relationship issues and her boyfriend and all the money that was being paid out there. So we'll be on the look for that. Have a good day, and we will see you next time.